Rishus Marina, Rav Shlita. This shiur is said le'ilui nishmas Avram Yosef ben Yitzchok, father-in-law of Mr. Della, and it is an interesting and perhaps daring subject. In fact, my wife said to me, you shouldn't speak about anything you don't know about. Well, that's the case with all the shiurim I give, but in this week's paper there was in fact an article, a headline, of a controversial fertility doctor who claims to have cloned 14 human embryos, and he says, I can clone a human being. And he gives an explanation as to what cloning actually is. Eggs extracted from a woman's ovaries, cultured in the laboratory. Scientists remove the nucleus from the egg in preparation for cloning. Skin cells are taken from a man's forearm and injected into the empty egg cell. A jolt of electricity is passed through the egg cell and that creates various cells and a cloned embryo, which is then implanted into a woman in the hope that she will develop a healthy baby. There are lots of questions. Where is it safe? In this country it's illegal. In 50 different countries it's illegal. There's a story here about this girl, Sadie, who sadly died aged 10 in a car crash, and her blood cells were frozen and sent to this Mr. Davos, who fused them with cow eggs, and the parents have given permission that their daughter be cloned. That hasn't happened, but there's a lot of concern about the safety of the procedure. There's a lot of scaremonger stories about people producing mini Hitlers. There was some science fiction story about called The Boys from Brazil. Brilliant. And Frankenstein's developing and all kinds of things, and it's the Catholics who have come out very strongly against stem cell research and cloning on the grounds that they say it is playing God. And the concerns were set out by Cardinal O'Connor of New York, the Pope's views on cloning and stem cell research. Reason one, it's an invasion of parenthood and there's no dignity in human procreation. He referred to Dolly the sheep, who was a clone some 6 odd years ago, but Dolly was a result out of about 300, in fact it was number 277 attempts of embryos, and he asks how many human embryos will be created and be destroyed, resulting in what he called murder. And there are other questions like, who is owning the clones, and will these clones be marketed, will it result in a slave trade, or the needs of warfare when these clones will be made? Hence the Catholics' opposition against it. You will be surprised to hear that the Jewish view is completely different. And we're going to explore that, despite the fact there is still, as yet, very few things written about cloning, but much of what I say is based on a shiur which I attended by a Dr. Broyd, who is from Atlanta, Georgia in the USA, who was visiting Manchester last summer.
He is in fact a rabbi of a shul in Atlanta, Georgia. He is a dayan on the Beis Din, plus having many other talents as well.
Share about the subject, and he's also written a very interesting article about the subject. It's a development of medical science. In 1935 we had antibiotics, and in 1965 started the idea of transplants, and the problem with transplants has been the body's natural rejection of foreign matter. If cloning can take place, it may well lead to healing methods where the body will not reject, because the body is accepting its own DNA, its own cells, which have been cultivated by this stem cell procedure. It's been done already with mice, with sheep, with pigs and cows and donkeys and dogs and a monkey, and the question of course is, could it happen with a human being? What is perhaps more halacha lemaisa nowadays is one specific type of stem cell research which is called therapeutic. And that is not to create a cloned human being, but to create a limb of a body, or to create a new heart, or a new liver, or skin, which can then be transplanted to an ill person to make them recover. So the first kind of cloning we spoke about is reproductive cloning, where you actually get the DNA cells from the donor, and you combine it with the female egg, you fuse them together, you create the embryo, and you implant it into a uterus. That was in fact Dolly the sheep. But the other kind of cloning, or one of the other main kinds of cloning, is the therapeutic kind, where you are growing stem cells and you're creating like human repair kits. And then if somebody needs a heart transplant or a liver transplant, it will be generated from their own DNA and their own cells, and there can be a cure for Parkinson's disease, there might be a cure for Alzheimer's disease, but we don't know yet, because the concept now is to start the research and whether to put government funding into this research. And President Obama in the USA has now reversed a decision of President Bush, and he has encouraged more stem cell research. And so if this can take place, what are the halachic implications? What do we have to ask ourselves? And of course, if there is a therapeutic recovery, the question is simply, well, why not? We are partners with Hashem in developing medicine. It is encouraged. And there is, in fact, though, a psak which was quoted by Rabbi Abraham, Rabbi Eliashiv, was saying that Rabbi Eliashiv felt that cloning, as itself would be, violates the spirit of the Torah, and he thought it might be like kilayim. Because the question is like this: is cloning part of humanity's mandate to develop and conquer the world, as we say in Bereishis, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Kafches, or shall we say no, it's an inappropriate intrusion into the world order, just like kilayim is, that we don't mix species and interfere with God's natural order of creation? And that is the Ramban in Vayikra, Perek Yotes, Pasuk Yotes, that kilayim is a wrong way of ordering, reordering Hashem's world. And Rav Waldenberg in the Tzitz Eliezer, 1545, objected to the idea of cloning. But there are other writers, like Rav David Bleich, who thought that halacha may approve certain kinds of carefully monitored and controlled cloning. And Rav Tendler wrote to the New York Times in December 97, saying that cloning may sometimes be advisable. I mean, it's like this: if people have infertility problems, and a couple want to have children, there are many halachic problems when it comes to artificial insemination, IVF, in vitro fertilization. Rav Moshe Feinstein was lenient, but there were many poskim against him on this as to how one develops such a thing. And if one can do something with cloning, it can avoid a lot of the halachic problems which arise from artificial insemination. Because when it comes to cloning, you're not using sperm. You're just taking cells from a man's forearm. And therefore the questions arising about the wastage of sperm and so on don't even arise. So Rav Tendler explored that there may well be halachic correct ways, and Rav Bleich quotes the Meiri, a very interesting Meiri in Sanhedrin, Sam of Zion on the base, which says that if a person can make creatures without sexual reproduction, it would be halachically okay, provided that it's in a natural way and not with kishuf, not with black magic. Who knows, maybe the Meiri foresaw the idea of cloning. So on this idea of therapeutic cloning, there was in fact a letter written by the Rabbinical Council of America, the OU, to the US Senate in July 2005, expressing support for stem cell research for the purposes of medical enhancement. And the letter wrote, "Jewish tradition places great value on human life, and to treat and to cure it, and to be the Creator's partner in safeguarding the created." And therefore, the simple answer to the therapeutic kind of stem cell research is that there is no halachic grounds against it, if it is to provide cures to human beings. The question is, what is the status of an embryo if one is actually creating something like this? When does life start? When you have an embryo, at what stage do we say there is life? Because this is a question that comes up on the subject of abortion, which is generally not permitted unless it's to save the life and health of the mother. Does the embryo's life start from conception, or from 40 days after for a conception, or from birth? And there are different opinions. Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to be the view that it's from 40 days. And before that, the Gemara says that the embryo is called mere water, but there are others who say no, we have to respect it from the time of conception. Rav Yoel Yakubovitz, who is the son of the previous chief rabbi, Rav Yakubovitz. He is in fact the doctor at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine in Baltimore. He writes about post-implantation being a fetus which cannot be aborted in order to obtain stem cell tissue. But if you are obtaining stem cell tissue before implantation, before it actually reaches the woman that you are developing some sort of stem cell, then it would be a different thing altogether. Prior to implantation, it can't develop into a viable fetus. And therefore, halachically, there's no problem of disposal, because the problem is with stem cells. You're making lots and lots of these embryos, and only one of them might reach fruition. What's going to happen to the others? If you're destroying them, are you destroying life? There's a lot of dispute about this. It starts really from a Mishnah in Yuma. Mishnah in Yuma on Pei Beis talks about one can violate Shabbos or Yom Kippur in order to save a pregnant woman's life. But what about the fetus? Can you break Shabbos in order to save the fetus? So the Rosh there in Yuma presents a dispute amongst Geonim and Rishonim, some rule only to save the mother, and the Bahad says even to save the fetus. And the Ramban in his Taras Odom and the Rashba and the Ritva agree with the Bahag that you can break Shabbos even in order to save the fetus. So what about within 40 days of conception? The Kov and the Sanel quotes the Ramban that according to the Bahag, one can even be Mechalal Shabbos within those 40 days of conception to save a fetus. Pardon?
In those days, how do they know they're pregnant?
There are symptoms.
40 days.
Morning sickness. So the Shartzion is uncertain about this, based on a Gemara Yevama Samchtes and the Rambam in Trumas Perek Ches Halacha Gimel, that the fetus within 40 days is mere water. And the Ramban is followed by the Maharsham, the Titz Eliezer, the Shmira Shabskel Chosa, Sofek the Fashim Zalkel, that we will break Shabbos. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, quoted in Ishas Merom, he says even if there's just a possible mortal danger less than 40 days, you can break Shabbos. Now, if you can break Shabbos for a fetus which is less than 40 days old, then that gives it the status of life, and if it gives it the status of life, then you can't destroy it. And that is how the question of abortion comes up. However, Rav Vosner in the Shevet Halevi in Chelek Hei Simon Memzayin says that even according to the Ramban's interpretation of the Bahag, one may not break Shabbos to save a fertilized egg if it's not yet implanted in a woman. If it's not yet implanted in a woman, then it will never reach life. Even though you might argue it's got a potential for life, he says you may not break Shabbos for it. So if you may not break Shabbos for it, there is an implication, although it's not necessarily a halakhic implication, that if you may not break Shabbos for it, then it's not called life. If it's not called life, then because it hasn't reached the woman yet, it is an embryo which has potential life and not life proper, and therefore you are able to dispose of it and you're not guilty of murder. The Catholics, our attitude is that it's life, but in halakha it's not yet called life, according to most opinions, as long as it has not yet been implanted in a woman. And these are in fact talking about when it's developed from a sperm. In cloning, we're talking about when it's developed simply from cells of the body which is not from a sperm. So what are the questions relating to cloning? Number one, is it a misuse? I mean, we stress the importance of the Jewish family, and we don't want the idea of people just starting off babies without families, and the Gemara in Nidah Lamed Aleph talks about the three partners in the creation of human being, Hashem and the male and the female. It's possible with cloning to do without the male altogether, because the stem cells could even be taken out from a female and then combined with an egg from a female and then implanted in the uterus of a female. So that leads to a number of halakhic questions. Number one, is cloning allowed or forbidden? And in addition, if it is allowed, maybe it might be called a good deed if it helps procreation. Number two, what is the status of a clone? What is the family status? Is this clone taken from the cells of another person regarded halakhically as a child of that sibling, like a brother or sister of that clone? If it's related at all, maybe it's not related. After all, it wasn't procreated in the normal manner. And then the next question is, can such cloning lead to halakhic violations? So even if it's okay, la halakha, to do cloning and genetic engineering, might there be certain things on the way which could be regarded as temptation to lead to something which is against the halakha, and then Chazal would write quite justifiably prohibited. So the question is, the main thing is, what would it be used for? And that is to help infertility, to help couples who are unable to have children to have children. And then there's another question. If you are able to clone and to give a couple children, is a man being able to fulfill the mitzvah of Pirurivu, of having children, if he has children in such a way? There is another question, and that is what is very relevant nowadays, and that is gender selection. Is it right that couples should be able to determine whether they should want to choose a boy or a girl? And there is the halacha. If you have a boy and a girl, you fulfill the mitzvah of Pirurivu. So if a person has lots of boys and they want to have a girl, or they have lots of girls and they want to have a boy, are you allowed in halacha to do gender selection? Or is it just, it's not encouraged, but maybe it's okay. Rav Moshe Feinstein did allow artificial insemination from a Gentile. In fact, there may even be a preference that the artificial insemination is from a Gentile man rather than from a Jewish man, because there might be a Shiloh of Mamzerus, because with the Jewish status it comes from the mother, so the baby's born to the mother. But the status of the father is disregarded as to whether one's Jewish. On the other hand, if the father is a Mamzer or a Sophic Mamzer, then you've got a problem, maybe, that if there is a gene or cell taken from the father, then the subsequent child might be a Mamzer, but if the cell is from somebody who's not Jewish, then there wouldn't be a child about Mamzerus. So what is the mitzvah of Pirurivu? Is it a halachic child if it's not born in the normal way? The Chelkas Mechogeg actually asks, is one the halachic father if the child is not conceived sexually? Such as a Shaila in Eben Ezer, Perek Aleph Sif Ches. Where there is a seventh donor, is that the halachic father? Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rabbi Avadia Yosef says yes it is, but not everybody agrees. The Tzitz Eliezer in Chelek Tesvov Simon Mem, he holds that if there is IVF, in vitro fertilization, the father is not the halachic father. He believes only if there is a normal marital relations contact, that creates the halachic father. Rav Bleich disagrees, and so does Rav Gedalia Orenstein, who writes about this in Tuchumin Kaftalad, that the father is still the halachic father. So what about this person who gives his cells, the one who is the clonor, as it were, who creates the clone? Rav Bleich says that the one who gives the cells can't be the halachic father, following the view of Rav Waldenberg that there is no semen involved, unless the clone comes from the semen of the sperm cell of the father. That is argued against by Rav Yitzchok Shelat, who is from Mali Adumim, and he writes in Tuchumin Yud Ches that the person who gives the stem cells is the halachic father. And he quotes him in Chas Chinuch, in Mitzvah Aleph, who says that Pirurivu Shaych Afilu below the Elok. Even if there is no marital contact, but somehow the woman conceives from the husband in some other way, then there is still the halachic father. Many Acharonim disagree with this, Minchas Chinuch. However, Rav Yitzchok Shelat, he objects to the absence of two biological parents. And he says one should not play with nature, where you are creating a child without two halachic parents. Well, I know that Diane Ehrentreu did a bris milah at a bris of a woman who was single and artificially inseminated, and she thought as a geoist she wouldn't ever find a shidduch and she wouldn't be able to have children, so she decided she would go and become artificially inseminated, and it's frowned upon by the poskim, but if it happens, the child is a kosher yid and one does a bris milah. And so Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, quoted in Nishmas Avraham, he objects to a single woman conceiving by artificial insemination. And these lessons we can draw then onto cloning. Rabbi Yigal Shafran in Tuchumin Kerech Chaf, he forbids using sperm from a dead man. So let's say a widow wants to still derive something from her dead husband and to have children. He says no. The halacha says that we aim for having parents. And therefore, he says, what you're saying is if one does artificial insemination while he's still alive, some allow, some don't allow, and that's based on Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvas, and there are quite a few on those. There are three or four tshuvas on that in the Igros Moshe. But he writes, Rabbi Goshafron, the government should only allow this kind of fertility treatment for infertile couples and not for any other devices, as it were. Now, on this question of Pru Avu, it is an interesting halacha in Evan Oezer, in Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin, that if a non-Jew converts after already having had children, then there is the view that he is exempt from the mitzvah of Pru Avu because he's already brought children into the world. And even though these children might not be Jewish, there's low sogar al Hashemis Yitzhar, an idea of increasing the world's population. And the Bayit have rights there in Sif Kotan Yud Alev that as he's got children called after his name, he's exempt. So the question is, even if it's not a natural way of giving birth, since one has brought about in some way of groma a child to be born, maybe it's the same with cloning, that one still has formed some form of Pur or Avu. And then the question is, why should it be Osur? Why should cloning then be forbidden halakhically? There is one suggestion that it's like a chavor, it's like wounding, but you know, taking DNA cells from a man's forearm can hardly be called chavor or wounding. And so Dan Broyd can't see any issue with this. And he feels that because cloning avoids the halakhic problems of artificial insemination and IVF treatment and surrogate motherhood, general fertilization of sperm, he feels that there's a positive way forward if cloning can take place in a responsible manner as an alternative to these other kinds of treatments. And he says he's unaware of any issur. He obviously didn't know about Robert Rav Eliashiv said, whom we quoted earlier, but that was the view of Dan Broyd, who has gone into this subject quite detailed. So then the question now arises, what is the status of a clone? You know, what is the family status? Is it a child, or is it a sibling, or is it nothing? Is there no genetical relationship? And then there's another thing. If the cells are taken from a woman, and you've got the egg taken from another woman, and then it's implanted in the uterus of a third woman, who is the halakhic mother? Which one of these is the halakhic mother? And the view of Dan Broyd is that the halakhic mother is the one who actually gives birth. The one who matures it inside her over the 9-month period and gives birth, that is a halakhic mother. But Rav Bleich suggests in the subject of IVF that it's possible for a person to have two halakhic mothers. And he claims that this is the view of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Namely, who is the one who contributed the genetic material? Who is the one who was the egg donor? Who is the one who bears? You could possibly have three halakhic mothers, and you have to have kibbutz aveim for all of them. Well, and what if a woman, what if a woman has an ovary transplant? What if a woman has no ovum, and she's unable to give birth, so she gets an ovarian transplant? And then, as a result of that, she manages to ovulate, and she conceives, and she gives birth. So, who is the halakhic mother? Is it the one from whom the ovary was taken from, or is it the woman who actually gives birth? So we're throwing up questions which might be bordering on science fiction, but according to Rav Bleich, it's very clear that a person might have more than one halakhic mother. So what is the status? The status may be that this is a sibling rather than a child, right? Because it's like identical twins. The only thing we can actually imagine in real life as a concept of cloning is when you have identical twins, because identical twins come from a split cell, so that although any child has half the genes of one parent and half the genes of the other parent, and that's why children can look completely different to each other who are siblings, when you have identical twins the genetical makeup is identical in both of them. So that is like the clone. The clone is a completely identical genetical makeup of a person reproduced into another person. So do we say that it could be like the identical twins who are like siblings? And therefore it might not be like a child of a person, but a sibling of a person. So Dan Broyd says no, it can't be that way. And he quotes a Gemara in Yevamos Sadi Zayin Amud Beis, which says, what are children are siblings when they are shared by a common biological mother from whose uterus they came from. That is to say then, if children are born from a woman and they were both in that uterus, then they are called siblings. And in the case of cloning, you're still going through the biological passage of implanting the embryo into a woman who then matures it and gives birth. Therefore, he says, it must be that is a child of the woman. It can't be a sibling of somebody. And he talked about twin brothers who are converts, which is based on that Gemara of Yevamos. They may not participate in Yibam or Chalitza if the twin brothers are converts. Rashi says they can't marry each other's wives because they were born to the same mother, so they regard it as siblings, even though halakhically they might not be strictly siblings. So the question is asked by some as to whether this clone is an actual human being, or could it have the status of a golem? Yes?
Well, just on that point, take this girl in the paper. Let's say that girl was just a boy, and they took clones, they took cells from the boy, and implanted it into the mother. It makes the mother the mother, but it also makes her son the father, which could that be deemed as incestuous?
There is the question of, is there something incestuous going on? Yeah. The general psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein, not everybody agrees, when he discusses artificial insemination, is that as long as there is no normal sexual contact, then there's no incest. And that what happens outside the realm of sexual reproduction would not be called incestuous. Not everybody agrees with that, though. And some poskim are violently against that view and would hold that if one is artificially inseminating, there could be incest. But here we're not talking about artificial insemination. We're talking about the reproduction of cells which just come from scratching the skin off your arm.
Yeah, but you're then going to define that person, the donor, as a parent.
Yeah, well, in this case, the cows were used, so it wouldn't be a strict...
okay, that's another problem then.
Yeah. Our cells from Sadie's embryo might be extracted from... In the future, they might be extracted from the frozen hybrid embryo fused with an empty human egg with its nucleus removed, and this double cloning process could produce a human embryo that Dr. Zava said could be transferred into the womb to produce Sadie's clone. And the permission is there from the mother to do this. But it would be another human being. And the question, though, is asked, is there a golem here? The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Samachay on the base, talks about Rav who created a man, which was a non-sexual sort of reproduction. And he sent this man to Rabbi Zeira. And Rabbi Zeira spoke to him and asked him his name, and the man did not respond. So Rabbi Zeira said to this so-called golem, he says, you are artificial, go and return to the dust. And there it talks about Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Haya, who studied together Sefer Yetzirah every Erev Shabbos, and they created a calf, which was the third of the size of an ordinary calf, and they ate it. It sounds something, but they ate it without shechita. So the question is, and there are shadows and tshuvas about this subject, is whether a golem is a human being. You know, can it be killed without being liable for murder? Or can it be counted in a minion? There's the famous story of the golem of the Maharal of Prague. Some say it wasn't true, whatever, but, you know, could he be counted into a minion? He couldn't speak. Can such a person do shechita? Now, Rava's golem was not human, says the Chacham Tzvi in his Tshuvas, Tzadi Gimel, Tzadi Dalet. He says Rava's golem was not human because it was not from a womb. It was not given birth to by a woman. So he compares it to an animal. So, because an animal, Yachai v'tzar b'alechaim, if you cause it pain. But the Rebbe of Rishon questioned this view of the Chacham Tzvi. He said, Adam HaRishon was not born from a woman's womb. So therefore, are you going to say Adam HaRishon was not a human being? And he says this in Arlos 5a. So the question is, what constitutes a human being? And the Maharshal writes an interesting chiddush on the Gemara in Sanhedrin Samachay. He says, if the golem can speak and appears to be human, then it is human. And it's interesting he says this, because in Targum Unculus, in Bereshis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Zayin, where it talks about man became a living being, the Targum Unculus says, man became a talking being. So the issue is, and the Maharal of Prague's golem couldn't speak. If the golem can speak, says the Maharshal, then it's a normal human being. And there's a Yerushalmi in Nidah 3.2, which actually says in a very clear way, if the creature has a human body but the face of an animal, then it's not human. But vice versa, if the creature has the face of a human and the body of an animal, then it is a human. I think, was it in Greek mythology, the Minotaur?
Yeah.
Anyway, but this is all artificial, isn't it? With artificial insemination, with IVF, or with cloning, there is a difference between this and what we've been discussing. Because the embryo is implanted in a woman's uterus and she gives birth in the normal human way. So therefore, it is a normal human being. And that normal human being has bechira and it's got intelligence and all the facilities of the human being. And it's given birth by a Jewish mother and therefore it's Jewish. So that bechira is there. And so although the science fiction talks about mini Hitlers and mini Frankensteins running all over the place and being searched for around the world and attempting to kill them, the truth is that if cloning takes place, say, from Hitler, Yirach Shemo v'Zichrono, I think it's possible for such clones to grow up and become Gerim and to be Shomer Torah Mitzvahs and become Talmid Chachomim because they got Bechira. And each different clone has its own free will, separate to the other clones, because just like you've got identical twins, they can both turn out in different ways. One can become a tzaddik and one can become a rasha because of Bechira. We know that Yaakov and Esau are twins. Not identical. Alright. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman writes in the Kovetz to Oros 8:33, he quotes from the Mishnah in Bechoros, Yotzim and Amutim Mutav, Yotzim and Osso Osso. A clone is human, we're saying, because it's from another human. What comes from something which is mutter is mutter. What comes from something which is osser is osser. So there's no question about the fact, and there's viewers in the Chazon Ish in Yerideah 116 that it's inferred that if the golem is not human, it's inferred from the principles that the clone is a human. But there is a slippery slope, and that was the third question we started off with. Because we were asking about whether cloning is allowed or forbidden and the family status, and we've covered that. But can there be halakhic violations? The problems might emerge that people are selling human organs and weird experiments will take place involving suffering. The slave trade might be exploited. But this is a full human being created B'Tselem Elokim. And there is a concern, writes Steinbroig, that people might have less regard for the sanctity of human life of a clone because of the way it was like manufactured by humans. And they might not give it the same degree of respect. And that brings us really to the question of gender selection, which is a very practical question nowadays, which is not strictly cloning, it's more of in the IVF category. But there's an article written about this by Rav Baruch Finkelstein in Tuchumin Kaf Zayin about designer babies. Now it's all very well if one wants to do away, say, with Down syndrome and one wants to, as a result of a procedure, create a healthy baby, fine. That's a medical positive procedure. There's nothing immoral about it. But if people want somebody who's tall, dark and handsome with or dashing blue eyes or whatever, then there are morality issues which come into play and the halacha will be frowning on this. And he writes, his view first of all is that some say that you've got no mitzvah of puravu by IVF and therefore you might not have any mitzvah of puravu by cloning. He holds that the actual mitzvah of puravu is the be'ilah, is the actual marital relationship between husband and wife. What happens afterwards, the outcome, that child is born, from what moment are you performing the mitzvah of puravu? It's really the marital relations. What happens afterwards is a consequence. And of course, if one has a boy and a girl, one is freed from the future duty, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, and therefore he's masupik whether there is an actual mitzvah in any case. He also, in referring to the controversy of emitting a semen seed for the purpose of IVF, which Rav Moshe is matir but others are not happy about because of the wastage, and even where Rav Moshe Feinstein is matir, he makes various conditions and he doubts those conditions might be complied with when it comes to designer babies. And it's not comparable to treating infertile couples where the halacha shows flexibility to enable couples to give birth. This is not an issue when you're talking about designer babies. But he ends off saying that a rov might allow it in certain cases, but his general conclusion is that it's osur. Ryan Broyd identified a number of other problems which could arise from cloning. He's, in researching the subject, he's been asked, you know, why do you have to bother yourself with such a subject? Why do we Jewish people have to get involved in it? Leave it to the guy, let the non-Jewish people sort it out. And why should we have to go down what might be a slippery road with lots of problems, just like you get problems with abortion and so on? Why do you need to start with cloning? His answer to that is that if we are partners with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in medicine, if we are partners on doing things which can help humankind, then why shouldn't we be at the forefront of it and be a light unto the nations? So he doesn't see that as an argument. The other argument which has been put to him is that by increasing cloning and stem cell research, it might encourage lots of abortions. There is the problem in stem cell research, and that is brought out in this article, that it's not proven to be safe, and there could be deformities, and there could be other problems. And there is the concern that it could lead to more abortions, which are against the halacha. He feels that that is not a halachic argument, because if there is a pregnancy, then the normal halachic rules apply, if the health of the mother is affected, and so on. Otherwise, abortions would be forbidden. Then there's the third criticism which has been put to him about lots of mini-Hitlers and people using very, very weird devices to create all sorts of things. And he says, well, he sees it like any aspect of Bechira. Is a kitchen knife a good thing or is it a bad thing? You can use it for the good by cutting food and preparing for anything which is serving Hashem, Avodas Hashem, or it can be used for violent means in a criminal form of act. Is a computer evil or good? With a computer you might be learning Torah, you might be learning Daf Yomi, you'll be disseminating Torah, and a computer unfortunately can also be used for immoral purposes. It's all about the Bechira and free will, and so he says when it comes to cloning, it's the same thing. You will do something which might advance your Avodas Hashem, and therefore the whole Catholic argument falls away. There is no reason why it should be forbidden. And Rabbi Yakubovitz writes an article about this and this criticism of playing God. I think there was one cabinet minister in the government who was against stem cell research because of this idea of playing God. Rabbi Yakubovitz writes, he said, yes, we should play God. That is what Hashem wants from us, to be shutfus, to be partners with him in developing the goodness of mankind. And just like we have developed antibiotics which save lives, and transplants which save lives. So if cloning can save lives, that's a good thing. And obviously we're not creating designer babies, but if we're going to heal Down syndrome, and we're going to find cures for Parkinson's disease, and Alzheimer's disease, and heart disease, and diabetes is also quoted as something which can be enhanced by stem cell research, then alright, it's still early days, we need rabbinical guidance, and no doubt in the future there will be Shalos and Tshuvos written on it. But what is the bottom line on all this, he says? He says the bottom line is that we can appreciate that being healthy, every healthy person should remind himself how we already enjoy so many cells which are working constant miracles. That without human interference, that the human body is constantly renewing its cells in a way, b'derech ha-teva, which Hashem has created, and we take it for granted. So cells that have developed from embryonic stem cells of their own, it's already happening to us in every day of our lives that cells are being reproduced in order that we can function in a healthy way. Mor Abu Masecha Hashem. How great are your works, Hashem. And science does not blind us when it comes to faith. Science reminds us of the gadlus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we can appreciate the way we are created and the way we can function. Thank you very much. Yeah.